And good morning, everyone listening from Australia, and good evening for all of you listening in the US. Welcome to everyone who's listening live streaming on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. Welcome back to Radio Tony, and this is a new series of six shows called Energy Healing for Everyone. And I have the most divine co-host for this series, who I'm going to tell you about in a moment. For everyone listening, our gorgeous executive VA from the Philippines, Peo, is listening online and waiting for all your comments and questions to send you links and information as and if you need it. We are incredibly lucky to have Vivian Chopra on the show. She is an incredibly wise woman who has spent her life working in the field of energy. And then the series of the next six shows, we're going to be delving into all things healing energy for everyone, just as the title suggests. But before I introduce you to Vivian live, I want to tell you a little bit about this glorious woman. Vivian Chopra commenced her career training first in clinical psychology and then segueing into the Alexander Technique. The Alexander Technique is a hands-on method for retraining neuromuscular dynamics. Through this work, Vivian developed a refined sensitivity to energy, leading her to add to her healing skills. She perceived a need for healing to become a recognized profession, and Vivian then founded Four Winds Academy for the Healing Arts and Sciences in 1996. Nine, a school for training healers. Vivian's books include Everyday Magic, 20 from 2002 and republished in 2020, a memoir, and How to Lose Weight and Gain Money in 2004. And her latest amazing creation in 2020 is the award-winning, groundbreaking textbook called Complete Guide to Crystal Surgery, introducing the world to a new form of crystal healing. When not teaching, healing, writing, and talking to me on live streaming media, Vivian can be found gardening, cooking, and spending her time with her two gorgeous granddaughters. Her other interests include travel photography and making YouTube videos. Vivian lives in Cincinnati, Ohio, with her husband and two cats. And her gorgeous husband, I'm sure, is lurking in the background listening to us today. Good evening, Vivian, and welcome to the show. We're so glad to have you here.
Thank you. I'm thrilled, and excited to be here with you, Tony. You've been so wonderful so far, and I hope that that's how we proceed. I hope I live up to the amazing description you gave me. Fantastic.
Vivian, I'm really graciously privileged to have you on the show, and from my perspective, it's just been wonderful working with you in prepping for this show. I thought the audience might be curious about that beautiful accent. You've mostly lived in the US, but you originally came from South Africa. And I'm wondering if we can quickly talk about what it was like growing up in South Africa, and then a little bit about the move to the US and what prompted that for you.
Oh, well, that could take all six sessions that we have together. They're long versions and short versions of the story, so we'll stick with the shorter versions. Growing up in South Africa was not easy. I was 5 years old when the Sharpeville massacre happened, and that was a turning point in the history of South Africa. And I was only five. But I became aware that there were dynamics that would mean that I would one day have to leave South Africa. So at the age of five, that entered my consciousness that I would one day have to immigrate. And how does a five-year-old see that there's such a thing as immigration? Well, my parents' best friends immigrated from South Africa to England because of and in response to the Sharpeville massacre. And it was a sad time, but and I remember the feeling very, very well. My memory goes back to about age three. I think my earliest memories are age three. So that memory of when I was five, very, very clear. I mean, it was very graphic on my mind. We went into our friend's house, their name was the Blymans, and we went into their house and it was all dark and everything was packed in boxes. And there was one item that hadn't been packed, and that was a rocking horse, a child's rocking horse, very big, very big one. It must have been old from, you know, maybe even the 19th century, like an antique kind of a deal. It was very big rocking horse. And I thought, ooh, a rocking horse. And I climbed up on it and it creaked in this ominous way. And, you know, I can still remember that and the feeling. I can still see it in front of me. It's as if it's recorded indelibly on my mind. And that sensation and the creaking and this feeling of loss and sadness. And that was a moment in my childhood about South Africa, a very sad moment when I realized I would not be able to live in South Africa forever. I would want to immigrate for some reason at some point, or I would need to immigrate. And that's basically how we grew up. It was a very interesting place to live in South Africa. And as we said on the eve of our arriving in the United States of America, interesting places are fascinating to watch from afar. But when you grow up in an interesting place, it can be very, very stressful and very, very difficult. And the irony was that South Africa is unsurpassed in its beauty. Maybe there are other places that are equally magnificent and beautiful, I have no doubt. And especially where I grew up in Cape Town, the beauty, the splendor of the Cape, and as described, the fairest Cape of all, and the beauty of living under Table Mountain and the oceans and the game reserves and the people. Yeah. And, you know, the good thing and the bad thing, they're always the same thing. And the thing that was so wonderful about South Africa was its diversity. And the thing that made it such a hard place was its diversity. And growing up like that, you know, South Africa was the pariah of the world. So when I hear you saying beautiful accent, I'm thinking, oh, well, this is the accent that I had to keep hidden, because I didn't want to identify myself as a South African. When I was a teenager and in my early 20s, when I was traveling, you felt ashamed. You felt you had to keep it a secret that you were from South Africa, because we were the pariah of the world with our institutionalized racism and so on. And it was hard, but I did get an amazing education as a privileged person because of the color of my skin. I did get an amazing and extraordinary education there. And I got many benefits from growing up in South Africa that I hope that people living in South Africa can still benefit in that way. And I don't know, you know, I'm out of touch now, I must be honest.
Yes. Yeah. Because, Vivian, your family, lots of members of your extended family actually immigrated to the US as well, didn't they, getting out of South Africa?
Well, my husband's uncle, actually, after Sharpeville Massacre, the family clubbed together and sent the youngest sibling to the United States. And because they also felt there must be a path for people to be able to get out of the country. Very hard to get out of South Africa. It's very hard to get into the USA. It's very hard to get into another country. I mean, you don't just walk in. And they welcome you with open arms and say, here's your home and here's your job and now lots of and best of luck. It's a battle. It really is a battle. So anyway, Neil's uncle Herbie came to the United States and he settled here in Cincinnati. And you asked, how did I come to the USA? And yes, now we live in Cincinnati and Uncle Herbie paved the way. And Uncle Herbie made a path for the rest of the Chaparral clan to come. And actually his siblings didn't, but many of the next generation, the siblings' children, and, you know, my husband, Neil included, we did come. And forever we'll be grateful to Uncle Herbie for this extraordinary thing. But that's not what brought us to Cincinnati. I must say, we were struggling to find a way to immigrate into the United States. And I ended up being by a vision. I had a vision. We had this strange experience of getting multiple phone calls from Johannesburg. And at that time, I'm now talking, I'm talking in the 1980s, and I was getting 1988, multiple phone calls from Johannesburg asking me for an Alexander teacher in Johannesburg, and they weren't any. And so despite the logistical nightmare where our son was 18 months old, I decided I'm going to go to Johannesburg because I'd got, I had a list of 12 people who wanted Alexander lessons in Johannesburg.
Yes.
And I talk about this in my book, Everyday Magic, and I call this section the call. And it was these calls that kept coming. And I thought, something's going on and I need to listen. And after the third call, I started keeping a list of names. And this is in a short space of time. This is not over a few months. This was in over 2 weeks that this list of 12 names accumulated. And I said, I'm going.
Oh, wow.
And then Neil had also just qualified as an Alexander teacher. And he decided to come with me. And all three of us, our eldest child and Neil and myself, went up to Johannesburg. And everyone said, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? I mean, Tony, I had at that time in my appointment book 73 clients a week. I kid you not. These were half-hour sessions, 15 Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and 8 on a Wednesday afternoon and 7 on a Saturday morning. It was just crazy. I mean, it was. And now I'm going to Johannesburg as if I don't have enough work or something. We always said, what are you doing? What are you doing? I said, I don't know. I'll find out when I get there. And what happened was we got really busy really quickly. We were fully booked. We had gone up to Johannesburg for 2 weeks. The grapevine just went into action. The phone was ringing off the hook. And we were fully booked, fully occupied. And I lay on the bed. I was quite tired, you can imagine, with all those appointments and everything.
You can imagine.
Looked out the window. It was full moon. The clouds were drifting across the moon. It was like, you know, I was like I was in a movie. I went into a light trance. And then I saw a red carpet unfurling towards me and beckoning me. And the red carpet was coming from Cincinnati, USA, rolling across the Atlantic Ocean and coming to us in Johannesburg. Now, Cincinnati and Johannesburg are both built on seven hills. And I needed to be in Johannesburg to get the insight that I was about to get. And the insight was this. I turned to Neil and I said, Neil, if we can walk into Johannesburg and have a thriving business just like that, why don't we do this in Cincinnati? We called Uncle Herbie and he said, come on over, let's get going. And from there, it still took a long time because we did have to get green cards and so on.
Yes, and that's quite a big, long, and involved process.
Very, very.
So I want to quickly talk about Alexander technique and what drew you to the technique.
Well, I was looking for something somewhere in the world that would help me with my absolutely ghastly posture. Now, if I say I have ghastly posture, I can't even say the words.
Yes.
So true it was. People in the street would stop me and say, stand up straight, girly, because I was really, I mean, I was like this. I was one of these. And I'd sort of straighten up in front of the mirror like this. And I'd watch, and as I'd be watching, I'd watch my body just curl over like that again. And I was just, I had terrible tension, very, very tense child, very tense teenager, took school very seriously, way too seriously, probably still take everything too seriously. But I was very tense, and that was giving me overcontracted muscles, everything bunched up. So I needed something. And then one day, the miracle happened. I'm sitting at the swimming pool, and the person next to me says, who was a drama student in England at RADA, Royal Academy for Dramatic Art, and she said to me, I am going to see a posture. I'm going for a posture lesson now. I said, what do you mean? She said, it's called the Alexander technique. All the actors and actresses at all the conservatories across the world get trained in the Alexander technique. It's known as the secret of stage and screen. And I said, wait a second. What are you talking about? She said, it's the Alexander technique. And there's one teacher in South Africa, and her name is Joyce Roberts, and she lives in Rondebosch. Well, that was right across the road from the high school that I went to, at the place where I theorized one day in class, looking around me at everybody else's terrible posture, that there must be something somewhere in the world that could help me. It was right across the road, of course. But there was only one. Yes. Only one in South Africa at that time, Joyce Roberts. And so that was, now I have to make a confession. I have a telephone phobia. So you have to know how this is a little bit, you know. But anyway, we're talking back quite a number of years, and I had never made a phone call before for myself. You know, my friends used to complain, why do you never call? And I just said, and I didn't like speaking on the phone, and I didn't like to talk on the phone, and I certainly didn't feel confident making a phone call. And of course, that was rotary dial, when much of the time you got a wrong number, and that just seemed like a terribly frightening thing to get a wrong number. Yeah. I mean, now who cares? It just was so intimidating. So it was, two things. It was, you know, a watershed thing in my life. I made the phone call. And I paid for it myself. I didn't ask my parents. I was still quite young. But I didn't ask my parents to pay. I'd won a scholarship. And I took my scholarship money and I used it to pay for my Alexander lesson. So it was really that moment of stepping into my identity as an adult and making that transition. And what I chose was the Alexander technique. And it's a lifesaver. I'm not the only person who will say that the Alexander technique saved their life. And in case anyone thinks I may be exaggerating, I will say that my darling brother died because he did not get his life saved. And I'm here to tell the tale because I did get my life saved, and I got my life saved by the Alexander technique, because it teaches you how to stop and think about what you want and how to get your brain to send that correct message to the rest of you. You can call it your body. You can call it your mind. We don't split body and mind in the Alexander technique. And it teaches you just how to, literally the word is inhibit, because it's a neurological function, how to stop those habit patterns and automatic responses and unthought reactions from happening. It teaches you how to halt that process. And it's a wonderful, wonderful process of being conscious about being a conscious being. And learning how to use that consciousness and use your intelligence to help yourself in every way. Yes. But most people will use it either for performance or athletics or for pain syndromes like back pain and headaches and so on. It's a wonderful technique. And it feels fabulous. I must say, you know, you can't describe it because it's like trying to describe what music sounds like or what it feels like to ride a bicycle. It's a kinesthetic experience, and it feels wonderful. It doesn't feel like a lesson, but it is a lesson, and you're learning neurological pathways, and you are learning how to do things differently. It's extraordinary. It's fabulous. I don't know why I'm being so serious. I should just be wow, enthusiastic.
It's perfectly... Obviously, it is a tried and true technique. If lots of athletes, actors and performance people are using it to retrain their brain. The Alexander technique has its roots connected to Australia. Can you tell our audience about that wonderful connection, please, Viv?
Well, Alexander was actually born in Tasmania, and then he went to Australia, and he was a soliloquist in the 1880s or so, and he was a Shakespearean soliloquist, and he'd get up on stage and he would recite, and unfortunately he kept losing his voice, and he used his reason. I mean, imagine that, using your reason. He used his reason and... Someone was rational once. Anyway, he thought about it, and his logic went as follows. If when I'm speaking, my voice is okay, and if when I'm quiet, my voice is okay, and it doesn't take any strain and nothing happens to it. But when I get up on stage and recite, then my voice breaks down. Then it's something I am doing when I recite that is causing me to lose my voice. And he set up a system of mirrors, and he watched himself in the mirrors, and he watched and watched and watched until he started to see what at first were inobservable patterns, but then became fairly obvious. And the main thing that he noticed was that upon beginning to recite, he would lift his chin, compress his neck, and kind of gasp in order to get the air. And he had to retrain that into getting his head to what we call head forward and up and getting the sound to open. Because you see, even if I just do that, then my voice changes. And if I do that, then my voice becomes more resonant and different. You can see why it's used on stage, but it also has this bonus of changing your posture and restoring it to that beautiful, harmonious physicality that we see in toddlers where they're just beautiful. They're just there. It's like they're hanging in space.
Yes.
And to tell you the truth, that is what we're supposed to be, suspended from the ground up in a tensegrity structure that just holds its own. But you've got to get all the pieces harmonizing correctly. And that's what the Alexander technique is. It restores that. So anyway, Alexander was in Australia and he restored his voice. And then people came to him to help get help with their voice. And then they'd notice that if Alexander helped them, their necks would get better, their back pain got better, other health issues seemed to change under this dynamic. And so it started to notice that it wasn't just for voice, but actually for everything. And also the other thing that happened was he was giving verbal instructions. And then one day he got a bit frustrated with people and said, not like that, like this. And he put his hands on and started to guide people into what it was he wanted. And that is the key aspect of the Alexander technique, is that as Alexander teachers, we actually give the person the experience of how they can be different. Yes. It's an immediate different experience of self that is beyond liberating and beyond uplifting and beyond creative. I mean, it's the surge of what we call up direction, because instead of being this way and pulled down, we're starting to open up and lengthen upwards. Our energy is going in the right direction.
I asked you about the way that Alexander technique led to a number of other healing modes, because as we know, the Alexander technique was really wonderful for back pain, headache, and neck pain. What sort of other modalities did it pave the way for that we use today?
Well, the Alexander technique does have derivatives. There's Feldenkrais technique and another one called Rubenfeld synergy technique. But for me personally, the Alexander technique was like this massive door opener. It was like it opened a door onto a hallway with many, many doors going off it. And what happened to me once I was working with people that much, I actually became sensitive to the human energy field. The first time it happened, somebody asked me to show them the Alexander technique. And so I went to put my hands on, and it was really like this. I'll bring my hands up for the screen. And I went, okay. And I tried to get my hands on the person, and there was like a barrier. And I thought, why do I have to push to get my hands through the air to get them onto this person? And there was something there. And I thought, that's like weird. And anyway, I pushed through and got my hands on. And it wasn't that I was unaware of the such a thing as an energy field or aura, but it was that I was experiencing it so palpably, I mean, like a wall. And I think the person was shy. You know, when people found out I was studying clinical psychology, they used to sort of hide behind the pillow and go, oh, don't look at me, don't look at me. As if I could read their minds. Kind of funny now because I can read minds, but but I don't want to. However, you know, when it comes to when it came to the Alexander technique, now I can look at people and see a huge amount of information about them because there's a visual component to the Alexander technique that's very strong and not quite as strong for clinical psychologists. But now it goes beyond that, and people kept saying, Vivian, you're psychic. Vivian, you're psychic. Well, I'm not psychic. I'm a trained psychologist. I'm perceptive. I'm insightful. I'm not psychic. No, you're psychic. I'm just very perceptive and I'm insightful. No, you're a psychic. So finally, it turns out, you know what? It's true. I am psychic. It's just I didn't realize other people weren't seeing and perceiving what I was seeing and perceiving. I had no idea. I really just had no idea that the detail that I was perceiving and so on was beyond. Anyway, the Alexander technique is the cause of that. I am so sensitized to information. And you change your brain, you see. You change what you do, you change your brain. And the Alexander technique changed my brain. I would say my IQ went up more than 20 points through the Alexander technique. Not because it made me cleverer, but it got me using my potential.
I wanted to talk about the founding of your wonderful Four Wings Academy for Healing Arts and Sciences. It's an amazing achievement, and I'm sure it was a huge undertaking. Can you tell the audience a bit about the sorts of training that you do through the academy and the sorts of results that your trainers get when they're fully qualified?
Well, fully qualified, that's a hard thing to say. So we had an Alexander training school. I mean, I'm still in training, so I'm not entirely clear what fully qualified is in the field of energy healing. But it is a physician heal thyself kind of training. Many healers have an illness, an autoimmune disease, or some kind of devastating illness that they have to heal themselves from, and they thereby become healers. So that is one way that people in our day and age do become healers or get onto the path of becoming a healer. But for me, it was through the Alexander technique, becoming so sensitive and then wanting to be able to work with people's organs and other things that you're not trained for in the Alexander technique, and sort of really wanting to help people even more. And because I was becoming sensitive to it and I was perceiving things and wanted to empower myself and my clients. And we had an Alexander training course, which we started. I started training Alexander teachers back in 1983 when I first finished my Alexander training. We started with the next group in Cape Town and so on. Then we came here to the States at the end of 91, and we started our own Alexander training course in 1993. And so we had the space, we had the tables, we had the premises, we had the equipment. And one day, just like that vision that I had about coming to Cincinnati, I got another message, as it were, from who knows where. It turns out it could be angels or spirit guides or something like that. Yeah. But the download came, and the thought came that I should be using this space for more than just the Alexander technique, and I need to start holding workshops and training people in energy healing and those topics. Yeah. And that sort of kind of unfolded on its own. It was a very natural and organic process. I was responding to requests again, because people would say, will you show me how you do that? Because I'd had some adventures where in Alexander lessons, I'd had spirit guides come in and give me messages, much to my shock and horror. And then they came true, and that was much more to my shock and horror, because I had to start redefining my understanding of the world. I mean, you got to understand, I'm trained in psychology. I'm not up for woo-woo stuff and airy-fairy made-up fantasy attribution to fairies and whatever. And next thing I know, I'm busy with devas and angels and spirit guides and power animals. And here's the irony, that is the eternal world. And this world that we consider reality is fickle, changing, and temporary. And I've had to live now with one foot in each dimension since those days. And anyway, the spirit guides pushed me, kicking and shouting, shoving and resisting, into establishing Four Winds Academy. And it came out of having the space and getting the insight, because the Alexander training course was Monday to Friday in the mornings, yes. And so what about the weekends? What about the afternoons? What about the evenings? And so we started having other classes. And so Four Winds Academy was born in 1999 in response to people wanting those kind of classes. And when we called it Four Winds Academy, that's a kind of a funny story too. I didn't know what to call it. And the spirit guides, they always spoke to me in riddles then. So much so that a psychic, like a true psychic, a real psychic, not me, I'm a play psychic in my own eyes. So a real psychic, her name's Anita, and she said to me, "Why do your guides speak to you in riddles?" I said, "Can't you make it stop?" She said, "It's terrible." I said, "Oh, no." Meanwhile, she had strange ones too that were jumping off up and down off the table. But in any case, they just pushed me into it, and when I said, "Well, what's the name of the school you want me to do?" You know, I was a bit grumpy. "What's the name of the school?" And they said, "The name is Under Your Nose." And I was like, "Under my nose?" I was like, and this went on for a good period of time, like maybe 6 months. "The name is Under Your Nose," is all they would tell me. And then one day I was looking at the mail in the kitchen and I see Four Winds Drive on my envelope. And that's the name of the road we live on, is Four Winds Drive. And then, and it's like under my nose, the name is under my nose. And then I look at the street sign and it's also through the window and it's also right here under my nose. And I go, it's Four Winds. And then I had to figure out Academy Institute, what, and there's another Institute or something. It's a common name. Yeah. And that's how it came about, Four Winds Academy. But the beauty of it is that we teach four subjects. And those four subjects are energy healing, intuition, shamanism, and crystal healing. And those are the four subjects of Four Winds Academy, four subjects, and who knows, there's lots of fours in our life. And, it's amazing.
I find it amazing when you talk to people who are in flow with their life and their destiny, that the synchronicity is so apparent through so many levels of their life, from all sorts of things like you've just described. And it gives me goosebumps when I hear these stories. And if for people who live in this space of living in their flow and their purpose of life, it really is a fabulous place to do life from. It not only challenges you, but it provides answers when you need them. It provides guidance when you want it. And everything flows relatively smoothly in when you're working in that space. I want to actually get onto the first of your amazing books, which is Everyday Magic, published in 2002 and republished in 2020. Yes. Can you tell the audience about this book? Vivian, well, it's a wonderful book.
Yes. Every story I've told so far here and a whole lot more about my encounters with the spirit dimension and my encounters with life and encounters with disappointment and encounters with adversity and encounters with grief and pain and loss. It's all there in the book. And I started writing Everyday Magic when I was 40, and it took me 6 years and 7 drafts to write it. And people were quite challenging. They said, "How can you be writing a biography, an autobiography or a memoir when you're so young?" And I said, "It's the first half of my life, and it gets me to where I am now. And the next half will be the next installment." And so, I stood by my guns. I knew when I was a kid, before I was 12 years old, that I was going to write a book, and about my life. And I even said, and then I even had a working title. It was, "We lived on Mountain Road," and I said, "We're going to call it Mad Mountain Road." In South Africa, mad means crazy. You know, I grew up with a bunch of crazies, And they were, we were all crazy there. And that's what I was going to call it. So anyway, Mad Mountain Road became Everyday Magic. And there are several different themes. One thing is I read The Way of the Peaceful Warrior by Dan Millman. And I thought, this is a fantastic book, but I was green with envy. Where did he get this amazing teacher Socrates from? I was like, and then I realized, this was no person like that. That's an amalgam of all these different teachers, you know, click. And then I thought, yes. I have had the most extraordinary teachers in my life. And the thing I've always wanted to do most, and the thing that floats my boat, is to teach. And I just thought, I just need people to see that you don't need a made up, fictional, synergistic teacher. Just take a look at who has taught you and what you have learned and how amazing that is, and appreciate what you have had and what you have got. And if you never had a good teacher, go get one. It is the best thing in life is a good teacher. It is so important. And, of course, nowadays they call it they dress it up with mentoring. Well, you go from mentor to mentor and teacher to teacher as you go through life. So that's one of my themes in Everyday Magic, is my extraordinary teachers. And and of course, sometimes your enemies are your teachers, and it's also extraordinary, although you hate every second. But it's unfortunately, well, the good thing and the bad thing is always, there are always going to be the same thing. So even the enemy is a teacher. And it's unfortunate. So that's one of the themes, is the theme of teachers, and to appreciate our teachers and to appreciate what we learned from them. And I tell you what, Everyday Magic, when I read it now, I just go, wow, I should do that again. I mean, it inspires me still. And it's a page turner, you know. I'm reading it and I go, I wonder what happens next. It's like, Dundam, you wrote the book. You lived the life. What do you mean, what happens next? But it's genuine. It's like, woo! And the one time I was sort of glancing through the book, and I was reading about my experience of going to England and attending the Alexander training course there. And I go, wow, that was a fantastic time. I think I'll go back, even if I have to mortgage my house. And you know what? I was on that plane and went back for continuing education because I saw, hey, I'm missing out. My own book taught me something. How fantastic. And that's how it's meant to be. That's how it's meant to be. So that's one theme. But then I also noticed something else. I'm like looking at every chapter in Everyday Magic one day, and I go, this book isn't about me. This is about spirits and spirit guides. They completely taken over the book. Every single chapter talks about an encounter with the spirits and how it's influencing me. I didn't even write that consciously. It emerged on its own. Absolutely amazing. And then there's the actual stories. And these are stories I cannot believe myself. I still go, pinch, pinch. Are you making this up? Are you exaggerating? You know, I can say a truth about my life in the flattest tone, and it will sound like an exaggeration. Life is exciting. It's exciting. Yes. It's amazing. It's not all nice. No, it isn't. No. But if it's all nice, and then you can't appreciate the good part. It's not designed to be all nice. It is designed, unfortunately, to be painful. But if you don't have the down, you can't have the up. You know, you're not going to get that, and you do want that in life. And if your life is all down, got to do something about it. If your life's all up, I don't know, show me that, you know. And that's what Everyday Magic is about. It's a case study. I'm just an example. Neil and I were just talking. Every show we watch has got the same plot, but different characters. That's our lives. Yeah. We've all got the same plot going on, but we've got different characters playing the different parts. And the book is really about the reader. The book is a case. I'm using myself as a case study, and I am talking about my experiences. But the point of the book is for the reader to thoroughly review her own life and really see the value in the ups, the downs, the moments of despair, the moments of hope, the inspiration, the flow, the teachers, the opportunities, and including what's missed. Because if you identify the moments where you could have done something differently,
yes,
the opportunity comes again. You can recognize it.
You'll know it.
That's one of the ways I've had to live my life, because I had many disappointments in my life, just like everybody else. And I've coached myself.
Do you think that those moments of difficulty and tragedy are designed to teach us and get us to the next level? I know in my own life, those difficult times and challenging times are always preparing me for the next level of wonderfulness. And I don't ever realize that whilst I'm in that horrible moment in time. I don't realize I struggle and get cranky and like, why do I have to go through this? It's not until you're on the other side, when you've walked through it and things are leveled up, that you go, oh, okay, that's what that was about. Okay,
correct.
Next time I'll try and remember just to walk through it with a bit more gratitude and nicety to myself. I'm one of those people who tend to be very difficult on me when I should be possibly a little bit more loving to me in those moments when life is tough and difficult and the struggle. Because at the other side of that, there will be something better. Have you found that, Vivian, that there's always the next level or the next better or the next happiness?
I think you know, we say every cloud has a silver lining, and life is one big cloud. The point is the silver lining. The point is finding the silver lining. And I can just say that absolutely, definitely, my heart was set on becoming a clinical psychologist. And I'm one of those people that if I have an interview, I will get the job, I'll get the position, whatever. But I got blocked from doing clinical psychology. I got rejected from that. And it was actually because I was very naive in terms of the academic politics and so on. And I played a very bad card. I exposed a lecturer for being behaving inappropriately. And I did it in innocence. I was only 21 years old, and I didn't realize.
Yeah.
And my boyfriend at the time, he said, under no circumstances should you tell anybody that this happened. Actually, I wasn't even 21 yet. I was 20. It was the year 2021. And I said, do not, under any circumstances, tell anybody that this happened. And I went and divulged it in what was supposed to be a confidential group. And I got blocked from proceeding, even though I had the academic results and everything was in order. I was a little bit young, but I had proven myself in every other respect, and I got blocked and on investigation. It was what I think, what I'm saying it was.
Yes.
I'm not making up some kind of excuse. But here's the beauty of it. That moment that I walked away, finding out that I had not got into the clinical psychology program, I suddenly started to feel free. And then I went and traveled overseas for a year. I went to Israel, and then from there I went to Europe, and I traveled for a year on my own. And I had to crack that phobia of mine. I mean, I said with the Alexander technique, I'd never made a phone call. Well, I couldn't go into a store and shop or anything. I traveled on my own through Europe with all those phobias.
Yes.
And because your weakness, it's the yin-yang principle. Weakness will become strength, and your strength, watch out, can become your weakness. And so that's what you want to do, and it's that yin-yang principle of moving and transforming from one to the other. That's what you want your life to be about, and you want it to be about those changes and transitions and transformations, because otherwise you're going to have to come back and do it again. And I don't know about you all, but
I want to learn the heavens now.
I think I want to learn it this time. But, you know, it is wonderful, and it's why I called the book Everyday Magic, because once you start to see the silver lining, you start to perceive, oh, there's magic afoot. And that's how it's everyday. Our everyday lives are actually magical. They actually are. But we have to see it, and then we have to do something with it. Yeah.
Yeah. For anyone listening, just so you know, those people on live stream, Payo will put the links up to Everyday Magic. It's also available on Amazon for those that are listening and not on the live stream on social media, or if you're listening to the program while you're driving. The links are in the chat box. You can also find them under chakra.com, which is Vivian and her husband's joint website. If you also jump onto radiotony.com under co-host, you'll find all the links to Vivian's information, in particular the link to Everyday Magic. It's an amazing book. Now, before we run out of time this morning, this show has gone so fast, I want to quickly talk about something that we will be talking about in much more depth over the coming weeks. And it's about Vivian's recently written textbook called The Complete Guide to Crystal Surgery. And it's a culmination of 25 years of research from Vivian's practice that's gone into writing the book. And if you look on the screen right now, Vivian's holding up the book. But I want to quickly talk, Vivian, what prompted you in the direction of a textbook of such depth and researched information?
Exactly. What prompted me? Well, you may ask. As I said to my friend, the magnum opus is too much. It's too magnum and too much opus. It was such a huge task and very difficult book to write.
Yes.
Well, it's kind of, I think it boils down to destiny. And I started working with crystals back in the 1990s. A crystal called me over one day and gave me an adventure with a nun who was actually the mother superior of her order. And that was the first time that I used a crystal on anybody to work with her. And it was a very odd experience. Oh, wow. And that is in Everyday Magic. And, you know, these are the reasons I wrote Everyday Magic for these stories. And then things developed from there. And I actually got to train with Melody, who sadly passed on December 31st, 2019. So just before it became 2020. And she's the only crystal teacher that I had. And the only energy healing teacher that I really had. Otherwise, I'm mostly being taught directly by the spirit dimension. I cannot say I taught myself because I don't think I could have. But I have definitely been guided very solidly and mentored very solidly. Anyway, she invited me to train as a Melody crystal healing instructor. And I did go do that training. And that was about 97 or 98. I can't remember. Although it's in Everyday Magic and I can look it up as I sometimes do. And I asked her, what is it called when you hold the crystals and you work on somebody holding the crystals and doing things to their energy field? And she said, I don't know what that's called. That's something new. And so then I knew, this is my cat joining in. You can see she has a special tail over there. She's got a little glowing tip to her tail. I think we'll get to take the kitty. So she said that now that's something different and I don't know what it is. And I thought, I'm doing something different. I'm doing my own form of crystal healing. Now you've got to know, I like to know the rules of the game and I like to stick to the rules and I do not like to wing it. That entire deal of crystals and crystal healing, I've winged it. I confess, I made it all up. I made it all up as I went along. I said to one of my clients, I said, I don't really know why people come to me. I said, I don't really understand it because I'm just making it up, you know. She said, me too, me too. Well, she's an artist. She was a commercial artist and she also had to make it up. She also had to compose the image. She also had to create something. And I went, it's an act of creation. Okay, I can get behind that. Now, I have to say, my dad was an inventor, so. A big fan of Edward de Bono. And that was a special bond that I had with my dad. And he was an inventor of packaging machinery, not crystals or anything like that. But that free thinking and ability to feel, to think out the box, and the capacity to do something that others haven't done before, that I inherited from my dad. and learned. He role modeled it for me as well, because it's more the role modeling that's important than the DNA, I would say, because you have it in you. Do you have it in you anyway? We all do. And it's the role modeling. This is a possibility, but it's demanding. You have to have a lot of self-discipline and do a lot of research. And we did something called the Midwest Crystal Conference, and that I can't remember what year. It was somewhere around 2005. And I presented my crystal surgery work to a group of people there. And they called me the next week to say they'd done what I'd taught, and it worked amazingly. And people started reporting miracles, Tony. I don't want to exaggerate, and I don't want to make claims, because A, I don't need to, and B, I don't like to. But things were happening that clearly this crystal surgery was worth following up on. It's how I'll put it. And I kept on developing it and started teaching more and more people. And then one of the people in the class, she sat down, she typed it all out, and she made the notes. And then we had her handbooks and manuals and so on. And that kept progressing. And then it came time to actually put it into a book, which was, well, actually I did the website instead, because I thought this is more suited to video material. And because it needs to be demonstrated. So we did the website. And then as soon as the website, which was an extremely difficult website to do and very demanding, as soon as it was finished, people said, and do you have a book? And I was like, And I gave it a few weeks. And again, the question, again, what people asked for, it was like the call to Johannesburg. And now it was the call for the book. And so, and then my friend Mary Beth, who's also an Alexander teacher and trained in all at Four Winds Academy and in the Healer Certification Program, and she said to me, "Viv, you've got to do the book. Come, I'll help you." And she's the artist. She's the most amazing artist. And she's the only person who could have done the artwork in the book. We had to turn 5D into 2D in that book. It was gossip.
My lovely Vivian. I have to interrupt you right there, because next week we're going to delve in deeply into the complete guide of crystal surgery with Vivian next week. We are completely out of time. I've had so much fun doing this show this morning. Ladies and gentlemen, the wonderful Vivian Chopra will be back next week, and we will continue talking about her complete guide to crystal surgery and all other forms of energy healing through spiritual, mental, and your mind, body, and soul. Vivian, thank you so much for being on Radio Tony. This is Healing Energy for Everyone, and we will be back same time next week. Bye for now, everyone.